When we have cellular stress, when our cells are being attacked by microbes and aren't getting the right nutrients, our cells are chronically stressed. When cells are stressed or injured, they release chemicals that activate nerves that tell the brain something's wrong. So we feel pain, we feel symptoms. But think about it, in chronic illness, you've got cellular stress all through the body. So all of those stressed cells are constantly bombarding our brain with this feedback that something's going wrong. So the brain is in this state of hyper alert. So the solution is reducing cellular stress. And you do that by eating the right diet, cleaning up your environment, really working on your sleep habits, and then protecting yourself from all these low-grade micro threats that can be reactivated in your system by all this cellular stress. And the best way to do that is with herbs.
I'm Dr. Seth Osgood, the founder of Grassroots Functional Medicine. After personally struggling for years upon years with chronic health issues that traditional medicine and pharmaceuticals could not resolve, I finally found relief in true healing through a functional medicine approach. Since then, I've dedicated my life to helping patients around the world transform their health by getting to the root cause of symptoms and restoring their body's natural ability to heal. This experience has shown me that a true state of wellness often requires an integrated approach that brings in multiple disciplines and modalities. In this podcast, I will interview a variety of practitioners and health professionals to educate and empower you on the full spectrum of tools that are available to reclaim your health and vitality. If you are struggling with health challenges and you are not getting the answers or results you feel you deserve, or you simply want to optimize your health and take a proactive approach to wellness, this podcast is for you. And if you like this show and find it helpful, be sure to tell a friend, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to your podcast. So let's get started. Well, hi, Dr. Rawls. Thank you so much for joining me on the Grassroots Functional Medicine podcast. I've been looking forward to this conversation, and I'm just excited to pick your brain about all the good information you know.
Well, awesome. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, just to start us off, I know you have a really amazing story that I think a lot of people are going to be able to connect with. Do you mind telling our listeners a little bit about your background and really what inspired you to dive into the world of chronic Lyme disease and cellular medicine?
Desperation.
That'll do it.
You know, I went into medicine with this idea of just helping people have better lives. And through medical school, I realized that, you know, the heavy treating patients with chronic illness with drug therapy just wasn't something that I could relate to well. And I ended up going into obstetrics because it was more wellness oriented and, you know, healthy population of people. And, you know, delivering a baby was just really cool. But what came with that at that time, this has been like 30 some years ago, was really rigorous call. So every second to third day, every second to third weekend for the whole weekend, I was on call for labor and delivery in the emergency room. And so that typically meant not having sleep or having very limited sleep. You know, I'd be lucky if I got 4 to 6 hours of broken sleep. And a lot of times I didn't get any. And I could do that and just be sleep deprived and push through it when I was in my 30s and, you know, trying to balance that and be a dad and going to all the stuff you do with that and a husband and just community person. It was really stressful and I just didn't sleep much. And by my late 40s, I started having a lot of problems. But it wasn't just like I'm tired because I haven't been sleeping. It was gut issues and brain issues. And I started having an irregular heart and just my whole body was falling apart, really bad arthritis, and went to conventional doctors and just didn't get much help. You know, just all the labs were normal. And I've since come to appreciate that conventional lab work and evaluations, you have to be really sick before you end up with a diagnosis. And I just wasn't quite sick enough. So I ended up with a diagnosis of fibromyalgia, which, you know, if anybody relates to that diagnosis, it gets you prescriptions for symptoms, but that's about it. And that just wasn't good enough. You know, there has to be a reason why this happened. And obviously, sleep was an issue, so I ended up having to stop doing obstetrics. But even then, you know, even with better sleep, the sleep just wasn't coming back, and I wasn't getting better. So I started looking around for other answers. Like many people started considering this possibility that I had Lyme disease because, you know, I grew up in the woods, and I got lots of tick bites, and I knew, hey, you know, if I can get a positive test, then I can take antibiotics and I will get well. And I finally got a positive test and I took antibiotics and I got sicker instead of better. And that was an awakening that I, you know, later realized there's a lot of difference between what we call acute Lyme disease and when you have this thing we call chronic Lyme disease, which isn't even recognized by the conventional medical system. And it's just not the same. And, you know, out of desperation, tried lots of different therapies. And the things that worked for me was herbal therapy. And there was information coming out that herbs had antimicrobial properties and some herbs could be good for this. So I was taking the herbs to kill the microbes. And I got better. But a lot of other things got better too. And it seemed like whenever I stopped the herbs, I would kind of get a relapse and I would start going backwards. So I ended up just continuing the herbs. And then I started learning what was going on with the herbs. And it took me to a different way of understanding chronic Lyme disease, what it really is, and understanding why the herbs actually worked. And it wasn't anything like I thought in the beginning.
Hey there, it's Dr. Osgood. Thank you again for listening to the show. I just wanted to share with you a game changer in daily nutrition, the Root Fix Foundation Supplement. Imagine getting the powerhouse combination of an advanced multivitamin, ultra pure omega-3, a robust spore probiotic, methylated B vitamin complex, and antioxidant support product all in a simple 4-capsule dose. In our fast-paced world, maintaining a well-balanced diet is a challenge, and that's where Root Fix Foundation steps in. Packed with methylated B vitamins, it's specially formulated to support detoxification, energy production, and a healthy metabolism, essential for keeping up with your demanding lifestyle. But that's not all. These capsules are also armed with spore-based probiotics, carefully chosen strains to ensure that your gut is on point by reaching the large intestine. Even if you're struggling with sensitive digestive tracts, this probiotic tends to be very well tolerated. Don't miss out on the foundational support your body craves and needs. Visit rootfixstore.com today and harness the power of a nutrient-dense life with Root Fix Foundations. Your body will thank you. To get your bottle of Root Fix Foundations, go to rootfixstore.com. That's rootfixstore.com. To get 10% off your first bottle, use the code PODCAST10 at checkout. That's PODCAST10. Now let's get back to the show.
Wow, that's awesome. And I mean, I think that's such a powerful story because I think a lot of people can relate to that. And it may not fit into the same exact set of symptoms that you had, but a lot of people are struggling with a whole myriad of different symptoms and they're getting ignored, right? They're being told that, you know, this is just stress, or which it could be part of, is always part of it, but, you know, or it's in their head, or, you know, they're just depressed and they need to take a medication. You know, I think that's just such commonplace. And then a lot of people even get criticized when they do look outside of the box and try to figure out, hey, is this Lyme or is this something else, which is just truly unfortunate. I mean, what advice would you have for someone who is maybe in a similar situation and they're not getting answers, or they're not getting the attention, you know, that they deserve to try to figure out what's actually driving the problem in the first place?
Yeah. You know, I think the first step with anyone is get education. And sometimes practitioners can be very valuable. I think people find themselves in a position of just being totally naive of what's going on inside the body and what to do about it. And they rely solely on a practitioner to guide them. And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on the knowledge of the practitioner. But, you know, my whole life since that time has been about educating people. You know, I've written several books. You know, writing was my therapy. You know, it's like if I could write something down for someone else to understand, it meant that I had to figure it out too. And so working through things, I would write and I would pass that information along to patients. And finally, you know, put it in books and other content, webinars, all of these kinds of things, just to try to educate people. So, you know, gain as much knowledge as you can and just beware there's a lot of misinformation out there too. So relaying that information, I think, is really important. Just thinking about the situation differently, I think it's really important for people to recognize that all of the microbes associated with Lyme disease, Borrelia, the bacteria that's the definitive factor in Lyme disease, but others, Anaplasma, Bartonella, Babesia, these are all low-grade pathogens. And that surprises people when I say that. These aren't high-grade pathogens. So a high-grade pathogen is something that makes virtually everybody that contracts the pathogen acutely sick and often very sick. So Ebola is a high-grade pathogen. Everybody that gets it is going to get really badly sick and most people are going to die. Borrelia, the interesting thing is in my journey and just talking to people, 90+ percent of people that identify with chronic Lyme disease don't remember a tick bite, don't remember getting sick around the time of a tick bite. And what that tells you is these are relatively low-grade pathogens. And that means you have immunity to them. And that's the big problem with Lyme disease is people get tick bites. So they get a tick bite and the tick drops off. They contract this bacteria. It's in their system. They don't realize it's there. And they go on for years. You know, I probably had these things in my system since I was a kid. So my latest research is showing that whether you're talking about Borrelia associated with Lyme disease or Streptococcus associated with pandas or any of these microbes that we're speaking about, they can get past the immune system and become dormant inside cells. And they can stay that way for a very long time. But if you have stress factors, often we call it a perfect storm of, you know, eating a bad diet, not getting sleep, exposed to toxic substances like mold or other things in the environment. All these factors come together to weaken those cells and allow these things to reactivate. So that's basically what's happening with chronic Lyme disease. But that's basically what's happening with every single chronic illness, every single one. And so when we're looking at these things, we have to realize that we're picking these things like this up. We pick up mycoplasma, we pick up chlamydia, we pick up Epstein-Barr, we pick up viruses, we pick up bacteria. All of these things can be dormant in our system. Some researchers are starting to call it the dormant blood and tissue microbiome. But not only that, things are crossing from our gut. You know, this idea that everything stays in our gut, nah, it crosses into the bloodstream. Things cross into our sinuses. And they get in our bloodstream and they circulate. There's evidence that we actually have a microbiome of our brain. It's made up mainly of things from our gut and our skin and our sinuses and respiratory tracts. So we got a lot going on in the body. This relationship we have with microbes is much, much deeper than just the gut or the skin. And if your cellular health is compromised, these things reactivate. And that's what chronic illness is in a nutshell.
I'm so glad that you brought that up. And I think that's so important for people to understand, especially when you're dealing with a problem, because unfortunately, I feel like in mainstream medicine, you know, we're as good as they are with acute problems and, you know, surgery and emergency care, you know, they miss that whole concept. You know, if it's not black and white, you did this, so it's this, you know, like with an acute infection, oftentimes that, you know, these problems just get overlooked. So essentially what you're saying is that you know, we're exposed to all of these different bugs, whether it's Lyme or herpes or Epstein-Barr. You know, we've got all of this, these low-level, low-grade pathogens hanging out there. And then we can have some type of catalyst, whether that's some type of stressor that suppresses the immune system to where these bugs can really, you know, surface and create problems. So it doesn't have to be an acute tick bite. And I agree. I mean, we see that all the time. And some people get caught up in that fact, you know, yes, you have Lyme, but they can't understand that because they didn't just get bit, it's not a problem. You know, it's hard to understand. And I totally get where they're coming from. But I think that concept of what you just described is so important on many levels. And that's why it's important to take a cellular approach. So on that note, do you mind talking a little bit, you know, in your book, The Cellular Wellness Solution, you mentioned, you know, some of those foundational elements to address health and to optimize the physiology so your body can overcome some of these problems. I'd love to touch on some of the main priorities that you mentioned, if you don't mind, and really explore them, because there's a lot of confusion out there about, you know, what people should do when they are sick. And I feel like those priorities that you mentioned are just so essential. And a lot of people want to jump to the sexy treatments, you know, and overlook these core factors, and they just struggle to really rebound and get better. Do you mind talking a little bit about diet, you know, nutrition? Because I know that is a core piece, and there's so many different diets out there and a lot of confusion about what people should do when they are chronically ill. What are some of your primary recommendations from a nutrition standpoint?
Well, I've got it down to four basic recommendations. But I always have to ask the question, you know, we think about food and how it satisfies our cravings. We get hungry and we want something that tastes good. And so we look to food to satisfy that. But what we're really doing is nourishing ourselves. So our cells, our body is made up of cells. You know, in conventional medicine, we divide it up into systems. You know, we have cardiovascular and, you know, and different kinds of specialists, cardiovascular and pulmonologists and endocrinologists and all these different people. And then there are organs and tissues within those systems. And that really dates back a long way. It dates all the way back to Galen in 150 AD. And that he divided it up into systems. And by the 1500s, we had figured out there were organs and tissues. And we haven't changed a whole lot in our approach since then. But when you get right down to it, the smallest functional thing in the body is a living cell. And everything that happens in the body has to do with cells. So if you keep your cells healthy, you're going to be healthy. All cells, you know, you can think about cells as little microscopic machines that do jobs. So some cells are pumping your heart. Some cells are producing thyroid hormones. Some cells are making impulses, fire in your brain. But all of those cells, all those little microscopic machines have five main requirements for being healthy. And if you do that for one cell in the body, you do it for every cell. This is a simple formula for wellness. So all cells need the right nutrients. All cells need a clean environment that's free of toxic substances. All cells need downtime to recover from stress, and that occurs at sleep. All cells need good blood flow from moving. And cells need protection from microbes. That's their arch enemy. So getting back on that first one, the right nutrients. And it really has to do with how our cells evolved. So for hundreds of thousands of years, humans ate a forage food diet. And that was about two-thirds plant matter and one-third lean meat or lean animal products. They didn't eat just the muscle. They ate everything, you know, everything that might have nutrients. So we had this wide range of nutrients. I mean, I heard it once quoted that, you know, ancient humans typically on most locations on Earth ate about 500 different plants over a year. You know, we might eat a dozen. So they had this wide diversity. But one thing about the ancient diet is it was very lean. There wasn't much carbohydrate or fat in there. And we need that to produce energy. Our cells have to have carbohydrate or fat. They don't need much, though. They're designed to run lean. So that's the deal, you know, because energy is such a priority, we have these strong needs for carbohydrate and fat. That's what's driving our taste. But our ancient food supply didn't have those things, and we had to eat a lot of food to get them. So we have this tendency to gorge on carbohydrates and fats that is just something that we all fight all the time. But getting back to a diet, making our food today more like what we were designed for, my four basic requirements are: eat a whole food diet. Because if you're eating whole foods, it's like a whole apple is made of cells. And all those parts of those cells that contain the carbohydrate in the apple are still good nutrients from your cells. And that's very different than a donut that just has pure carbohydrate and fat. So whole foods are whole cells. It's going to give you the nutrients. And if you're eating a wide range of whole foods, then you're going to get the nutrients that your different cells need. It's like your heart needs mainly fat. Your thyroid needs iodine to produce thyroid hormone. So whole foods, as much diversity as you can get. The second is eat more plants than anything else. Eat vegetables. Fruits are okay. Other plant sources are okay. But eat more vegetables than anything else, because that's going to give you the fiber that your GI tract needs, and it's going to give you that wide diversity of nutrients without the high carbohydrate, and it's going to fill you up so you don't tend to overeat. The third thing is try to keep your carbohydrate count, your total carbohydrate count, at about 150 to 200. That's not a ketogenic. You have to be below 100 to be ketogenic. So ketogenic forces you to eat a lot of animal fat in most cases. So giving yourself a little bit more room there just gives you a little more room to enjoy food, but it's not enough to damage your cells or cause problems. And that can vary depending on your activity level. An athlete, they're going to need more carb than that to really be comfortable. But, you know, keeping your that carb count low. And I don't carry a little book around and write all this stuff down. I just kind of generally know. It's like a banana, that's 25, 27 grams of carbohydrate. An apple is about 24 grams of carbohydrate. A cup of sweet potato, that's 24 grams of carbohydrate. So you just have this kind of general idea. And the last thing is a lot of people are doing intermittent fasting, narrowing their eating that window. And I think at least to 12 hours, but maybe even better, about 8 hours. Makes a lot of sense. Whether you need to narrow it down more than that is debated. But if you're following those basic recommendations, you're going to do okay.
I think that's perfect. And it's really not that difficult to do. You know, I mean, the fighting the cravings is the tough part in the beginning.
It is.
But I think, you know, once you get through that, and I remembered this, I mean, just how much better food, real food tastes when you get all of that junk out of your diet, and how much better you feel on all levels.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I've heard it said so many times, if you can cook and make vegetables taste good, then you're a high quality chef. You know what you're doing.
You have to
use other kinds of flavors. And I typically use meat more of as a seasoning.
Yeah,
like, you know, I do eat a little bit of beef and chicken, but mainly seafood. But it'll be just a little bit just to flavor the food, just to bring in that dynamic rather than like that big slab of T-bone steak I used to eat when I was a kid.
Absolutely. Well, do you mind talk a little bit about toxins and the importance of cleaning up one's environment when it comes to cellular health? What are some of the primary drivers of toxicity in our society today? And what are some easy things that people can do to really reduce that burden?
Yeah, it's challenging because we're getting hit from so many different directions now. I mean, every day you read about particulate pollution in the atmosphere. You read about microplastics and nanoplastics getting in our food and water. And all of it is petroleum and coal derived, basically, outside of natural toxins like mold. And that's kind of a whole different topic in itself. But we are literally being bombarded in our world today. And I think it is one of the factors that is driving our rising rate of cancers and chronic illness. you know, it's been well documented. WHO, the World Health Organization, has put out alerts that the amount of pollution in the air now, particulate matter pollution, is such that there are few places in the world that actually have clean air anymore. And then we're getting it in our food and our water and everywhere else. But it's a matter of how it enters your body. And there's really only three ways that it can get in. You can ingest it by through food and beverages. You can breathe it in, or you can rub it on your skin, and that's it. So thinking about it that way does give you at least some leverage in trying to solve the problem. So food, eating organic food, that's not going to completely eradicate all toxins anymore, because there's so much stuff in the air that it does get in organic food. And that includes nanoplastics and other kinds of things. But that's going to reduce it as a bit, at least. So organic food, I think, is worth the purchase. Can't always get it, but even so, eat your vegetables too. And then your water, you can do a filtered water system, RO, or you can go somewhere and, you know, buy filtered water. So it kind of depends on your water supply and where you're getting it from. We, here in North Carolina, we get our water from the Cape Fear. And there was a big deal recently that there was a plant upstream on the Cape Fear that was dumping PFAS chemicals into the water, and had been for like 30 or 40 years, and all the water was contaminated. And, you know, we already had filters in our home and that sort of thing, but there was a big to-do and cleanup money and that sort of thing. Well, our water treatment plant now is one of the best water treatment plants in the country, and our water is really good. I still use filters, but so, you know, it's just being politically active and knowing what's going on in your environment. Skin products, using natural skin products. And as far as air, indoor home air purifiers, cleaning your air conditioning filters pretty frequently. But the biggest thing you can do is try to surround yourself with trees, especially trees that aren't going to burn, that aren't at risk of forest fire. But trees are nature's purifier, and the cleanest air on earth is either over open water or in pine forest and other forests. So forests are really important. So not only being surrounded by forest where you live, but also taking walks in forest pretty frequently.
I love that advice, because I think so many people are stuck at home in a building, in a concrete building, you know, in front of their computer, surrounded by all these EMFs. We're losing that connection with nature, you know, something that our ancestors were involved in almost 24/7. And so people, we can't forget the power of that, and just being outside and how being grounded with nature, how just beneficial that is on so many levels. And it hits being outside in nature, hits almost all of the things that you're prioritizing, you know, for healing, for stress management, for movement, and for purity. You know, all of these things can be beneficial. So I appreciate you saying that. I think sometimes those basic concepts just get overlooked and can be the most powerful. But on that topic of exercise and movement, you know, again, we think about this stuff a lot of times with cardiovascular health. You know, exercise is good for the heart, but it's so much more than that. There's so much research, you know, just talking about the benefits of exercise with cellular health and cognitive health and mood and, you know, hormone balance. The list goes on and on. Could you mind talking a little bit about the importance of exercise and what you recommend to people who are struggling?
Yeah. You know, when we look at toxic substances, recognizing where they come from, and our ancestors lived in a pretty pristine environment, that started changing about 3,000 years ago when the Chinese found coal and started using coal to heat. And, you know, by the 15, 16, 1700s, you had cities all over Europe that were burning coal, and they were really toxic places. And it's not surprising that the rate of illness and the rate of infectious disease was so remarkably high in those places. So it's really important to recognize that toxic substances are organic molecules that have been distorted. So if you took the plant matter that became coal, or you took the algae that became petroleum, if you went back millions of years and ate that stuff, it would actually be good for you. But what's happened is, with millions of years of pressure in the earth, those natural chemicals, those organic chemicals that would have been healthy to us, have been distorted and disrupted into ways that aren't compatible with biological life anymore. So they're organic molecules, though, and therefore we absorb them pretty readily into our body, and they get embedded in our cells. But when those abnormal molecules try to get taken up by the cell and end up inside the cell, they basically mess up the machinery because they're interfering with all the natural chemicals in the cell. So the cell is stuck with this stuff. It's, you know, if you took sand and threw it into a machine, this machine might work, but it's going to have to work harder and it's going to burn out faster. Well, that's what's happening to your cells. But your cells are really amazing in that they can purge these things. So they can work their way out and push them out into the space around the cell. But they have to be taken from there into the bloodstream or into the lymphatic system and out the body. You know, I talk to people all the time that are using all these products of various kinds that they're putting in their gut to detox their body. And it's kind of like, yeah, but it starts at the cellular level. And what happens is, all those spaces around our cells that we call the extracellular space get cluttered and clogged with chemicals and debris from dead cells and dead microbes and junk. And that means our cells are basically suffocating. So that's basically what happens when you're inflamed. You've got all this congestion and cells can't purge toxins. And so that compromises the health of the cell. The solution is flow, is washing that stuff away. The solution to pollution is dilution. So when we exercise, we're increasing blood flow, and that increases flow of fluid out of the vascular space, out of the bloodstream, into that extracellular space around cells. So it's washing away debris, it's washing away dead microbes, it's washing away these toxic substances that our cells are trying to purge, along with metabolic waste. So when I look at exercise, yes, there's a long list of benefits, but top of the list always is it increases flow. It washes toxic substances away. So that's the first step in detoxification, is just helping your cells purge those toxic substances. So yeah, getting out. And it doesn't have to be intense exercise. Walking, yoga, qigong, just moving around in your day. So, you know, every hour or so when I'm working on the computer, I'll stop and I'll do a qigong workout or some yoga workout just to move and get that blood flow going, because it is so remarkably important for our cellular health.
I think that's important for people to recognize. A lot of people think, you know, when they're sick, when they're very sick, they feel like doing nothing, right? When you're struggling and inflamed, you know, we always hear that every time I exercise, I feel worse, I feel horrible. But there's right. always something you can do, right? And it's important to be intentional about that. Even if it's, like you said, just moving around a little bit or working on some lymphatics, doing something and gradually progressing to where you can maximize that flow. You mentioned lymphatics. What are some of your top tips for helping with lymph drainage?
Well, you know, just on top of the exercise, for people yeah. that are in that space that they can't get out and exercise. And I was there, you know. I mean, I went through a stage where it's like, if I can exercise hard enough, I can just push through this thing. And I kept hitting the wall, and the wall kept getting higher. And to the point that I could hardly walk a half of a mile. And what's happening is, you have all this congestion in your tissues and all this inflammation. So any friction of movement just makes it worse. It intensifies that cellular damage. So you get to a point that it's really hard to move. So gentle movements that don't create as much friction, like qigong and yoga, can be very important. But The other thing is sauna, and sauna of any kind. So what you're doing with sauna is you're consistently heating your body up to a level that you're increasing blood flow. So it's doing the same thing. So it's really important to do both of those things and to move to a better place. Now, lymphatics, you know, you've got your bloodstream that's basically pushing nutrients and fluid and everything out into the cellular space, but then you've got the space that has to be cleared. And especially, you know, if you've got microbes collected around in that space, you know, when you want to clear all that. So that space is cleared by the lymphatic system, which is just this more diffuse drainage system that collects in lymph nodes and then eventually and finally dumps back into the bloodstream to be cleared completely. So lymphatics clear that space around our cells. That's what's going on. And exercise, top of the list for moving lymph to clear that lymph system, really important. But there are other things that you can do too. Just there's something called a rebounder, which is a little small trampoline. You can jump on that. That's found to do it. A hot bath with Epsom salt, sauna, all of those things help clear the lymphatic system. Some of your herbs, there is an herb called red root that can help clear the lymphatics, but really all of your herbs are helping that process along.
That's great. No, I mean, a lot of that stuff anybody can do, right? It doesn't cost money to do the majority of what you just said. You know, they're pretty easy to implement just all at home with the right intention. But well, talk to me a little bit about stress. We all deal with stress. And as you said, you know, that was a huge factor when you got sick. And I think for the majority of cases, there's some type of stressor involved, whether it's physical, emotional, or structural, or infectious. But, you know, can you talk to us a little bit about adrenal fatigue and the HPA axis, you know, the things that drive that dysfunction, and maybe some of the tips that you recommend to bring things back into balance?
Yeah. Well, there's mental stress, and then there's just the stress of being chronically ill. And those two things can really come together. You know, our perception, how we go about life is very different than our ancient ancestors. You know, they basically woke up when the sun came up and their job was to forage all day to get enough food and not be eaten by something that bigger than they were. And that was basically life and maybe a little interaction with other humans along the way, but it was pretty simple. And then, you know, when it got dark, you went back to bed. And they didn't have clocks, they didn't have schedules, they didn't have all of these things. So we have the perception of threat coming at us all the time. You know, we have a deadline, we have to prepare for that. So we have all of these things that are driving us, and that affects how our brain works. So when you look at hormones, basically what that is a cellular synchronization system. So we have, our body is made of cells. All of the cells are working, they're doing their job, but they have, all of those functions have to be coordinated. And that's what nerves, hormones, and other signaling agents do. All the cells in the body are communicating with all the other cells in the body all of the time. So this complex network of communication is much more complicated than we really appreciate. And it's very dynamic. It's constantly changing. So the brain is using our senses to constantly monitor what's going on outside the body. You know, how do we go about getting food? Is there a tiger down the street that's getting ready to eat us? So all of these things the brain is monitoring, and it's using our nervous system and our hormone system to change, to modify cellular functions within the body to meet whatever the ongoing demands are. So our thinking brain is constantly processing that information. It relays down to the hypothalamus. So the hypothalamus is basically a coordination center to say, to take all of that information and then all the information that's coming from cells, that feedback of what's going on, you know, of how healthy our cells are, what's going on, and it processes it through the pituitary. to modify cellular functions. And so part of the pituitary is our sympathetic functions, our fight or flight response. Part of it is modifying metabolism through the thyroid, through night and day cycles, just general changes that we have in a 24-hour cycle in the adrenal glands, and then reproduction in the ovaries. So, but that's the brain using all that feedback to modify cellular functions. That's what's going on. So way back when, your ancient ancestors really didn't have a lot to think about on an ongoing basis. They weren't really worried about what is happening tomorrow. They didn't have a wedding scheduled for Saturday. They didn't have any of these things. They just basically got up and started the day. And so generally, most of the time, compared to how we are, they would be relatively calm. But occasionally, a threat would show up. You know, they would come out of the bushes eating berries, and there would be a tiger. And you know, then that would start that you either run away or you fight. And that, to do that, you have to reconnoiter all the cellular functions in your body. You know, digestion isn't a priority if you're running from a tiger. And so everything is shifted toward that acute. And that's done by the parasympathetic nervous system. You know, everybody knows that we have a parasympathetic, or the sympathetic nervous system. We have the sympathetic, which is that fight or flight, and then parasympathetic, which is vagal, which is how we're supposed to be all the time. But most people are activated in that sympathetic, that fight or flight response all the time. So we put our digestive tract on hold. We suppress our immune system functions, and those day-to-day maintenance functions get put behind. But also, if we're doing that chronically, it disrupts our circadian rhythms. It disrupts cortisol. So, you know, we're activated at night when we shouldn't be. And we, you know, we should be cutting the lights down early in the evening and getting ready to go to sleep. Well, we don't. So we cut our sleep window down. Average in America, most Americans sleep an average of 6.5 hours. It's just not enough. You're not getting that cellular recovery. And not only that, you're not resorting. Your brain is like a computer. It has to resort files. It has to restart at night. And if you're not getting that full 8 hours of sleep, that's not going to happen. It's just how we're programmed, and you can't get around it. So sleep is really important. And so these things disrupt it. But then just chronic illness does too. So when we have cellular stress, when our cells are being attacked by microbes and aren't getting the right nutrients and aren't getting sleep, our cells are chronically stressed. When cells are stressed or injured, they release substances or release chemicals that activate nerves that tell the brain something's wrong. So we feel pain, we feel symptoms. But think about it, in chronic illness, you've got cellular stress all through the body. We've got GI issues and heart issues and everything else, and our joints are killing us and everything's falling apart. So all of those stress cells are constantly bombarding our brain with this feedback that something's going wrong. So the brain is in this state of hyper alert that hyperactivates that sympathetic system, and that disrupts our hypothalamus, our pituitary, our thyroid, our adrenals, and everything else. So the solution is reducing cellular stress. And you do that by eating the right diet, cleaning up your environment, really working on your sleep habits so you're allowing yourself enough time to sleep. In the beginning, when your brain is hyper alert, that's not going to work, but it's a step in the right direction. Moving or doing something, just doing something to move blood in your body. And then protecting yourself from all these low-grade pathogens, these low-grade micro threats that can be reactivated in your system by all this cellular stress. And the best way to do that is with herbs.
So let's talk a little bit about that. I'm a huge fan of herbs, and I know you are as well. And can you tell us a little bit about why you're such a fan of herbs and what the difference is between using an herbal complex as opposed to using a pharmaceutical or an antibiotic? I know there's a lot of confusion out there about what the role is of each of them, but they're totally different. So I'd love to just hear a little bit more about that, if you don't mind.
Herbs can do things that nothing else on earth can do. You know, I read papers about therapies for chronic illnesses like multiple sclerosis, and I look at them and understanding what the herbs do, I'm going, man, what they're using is just archaic. It's so sad that we're not spending more time understanding the power and value of these remarkable substances that are all around us all the time. So when I first started studying herbs, you know, I had this remarkable experience, didn't know anything about herbs. I was just like jumped off a cliff and said, yeah, I'll do this because I don't see anything else out there that's even remotely possible to help me. And I had this remarkable experience. So my first thought was, well, you need to learn about traditional herbal therapy. So I started studying traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and, you know, the European and North American fields of herbs. And they all had value, but they all predate science. So they were observational. And what I mean by that is that, you know, practitioners knew that certain herbs would be valuable for certain symptoms or certain conditions, but they didn't really know why they were valuable. I wanted to know why they were valuable, what was actually going on. So, and what's really important is that over the past 20 or 30 years, we've just had this proliferation of scientists around the world, a lot of it outside this country, quite frankly, looking at what the herbs are actually doing to human physiology that might reverse illness. And what I came to appreciate is they're working very differently than drugs we use for chronic illness. So what we're doing with a drug is we are blocking a particular manifestation of illness. You know, we're blocking a process that might result in a symptom. We're blocking a process that might result in inflammation. So we're artificially blocking these processes, but we're not addressing the underlying causes. So people typically just don't get well. So just in a nutshell, comparing drugs to herbs, herbs are how herbs work is they are addressing cellular stress, all of the cellular stress factors. And when you address cellular stress, cells can recover. That's what healing is. The ability of our cells to overcome stress and injury is how we heal ourselves. It's as simple as that. So what we're doing with an herb is we're promoting healing by reducing cellular stress. In a nutshell, that's what's happening. And that's what's happening with any herb. But of course, there are variations of how we use them. So in looking what an herb does compared to a drug or an antibiotic or something like that, so all of your drugs and all of your antibiotics are single agents that have one very specific effect. When you take an herb, you're taking hundreds or even thousands of chemicals that we call phytochemicals. We're basically borrowing the plant's defense and regulatory systems. This is the plants are making these things to protect the plant cells. So when we use them, we're getting that same kind of protection. So taking an herb, your cells get protection from free radicals, from overconsumption of carbohydrates, from radiation, from free radicals and toxic substances of every variety. But they're also protecting us from microbes. And this is a big deal, because I'm finding connections to these low-grade pathogens to virtually every chronic illness, and I think there's a connection to, yes, every cancer. So these antimicrobial properties of the herbs are really important. Now, when you compare those properties, say, with an antibiotic like penicillin compared to one of our really good antimicrobial herbs like Japanese knotweed, What's the difference there? So penicillin is a single chemical agent. It actually comes from a fungus. So it comes from the defense system of a fungus. We didn't take the whole defense system. We just plucked out one chemical and we potentiated it. So it really is good for killing fast-growing bacteria. That's it. Fast-growing bacteria. That's the key. So if you get a pneumococcal pneumonia, we are talking about bacteria that turn over every 20 minutes. That's how fast they're doubling. So that penicillin is blocking their ability to reproduce. So you can knock down the numbers really rapidly. And it depends on that fast growth to work. And it doesn't wipe them out. It just lowers the numbers enough that our immune system can take over and clean up the mess. But the problem with antibiotics is it's also hitting your normal flora. And say if you're using antibiotics to treat something like chronic Lyme disease or even acute Lyme disease, is it killing those bacteria? Well, yes, it is, just not that much. The turnover time of Borrelia is 12 hours, not 20 minutes. So a lot of our low-grade pathogens aren't turning over very fast. So antibiotics aren't hitting them in the same way as fast-growing bacteria, so they're not working as well. The other problem is that one single chemical, bacteria get around it really rapidly. So you have resistance that forms. All it takes is 10 days using an antibiotic, and you start selecting out resistance to it. That's how quickly it happens. So the other problem with antibiotics is killing off your normal flora. That's a really important part of your defense system. Now, they're not growing as fast as those fast-growing pathogens, so you've got about 10 days to contain that infection with antibiotics. Any longer than that, you're going to start messing up normal flora. So that's a big problem. One of the things that I recognized when I used an herb is that I didn't have the same issues that I had with an antibiotic. You know, every time I used an antibiotic early on, it would disrupt my gut. 10 days and I was finished. I couldn't do it anymore because I would have such an effect on my gut. Using an herb, I expected the same thing. If these things are potent enough to kill what's making me sick, I'm going to have gut dysfunction, but I'm going to try. I didn't have gut dysfunction. My gut got better. And every time I used them, my gut got better. I've now been on herbs for 15 years, continually. And my gut is the best that it's been. So it's really important to recognize that these things don't disrupt normal flora. They're selective for pathogens. And that makes sense because the plants, what you're getting is basically the equivalent of the plant's immune system. You know, our immune system is selective for pathogens. Well, plants are using a chemical immune system so that it is selective for pathogens but doesn't disrupt normal flora. So that's a huge advantage. And it's not one chemical, it's hundreds of chemicals. So you're affecting a wide range of bacteria, viruses, protozoa, yeast, everything but just pathogens. So you're not disrupting normal flora. You can use them for a long time. And because it's such a wide range of chemicals, so far resistance to herbs is unknown. It just doesn't happen. So that gives you a real advantage. Now, would I use an herbal therapy to treat pneumococcal pneumonia? No, I'm going to use an antibiotic and go ahead and knock that thing out, but I'm not going to use it more than 20 days or 10 days. And I'm probably going to use an herb along with it because there are a lot of effects that I can abbreviate or not have at all by using an herb in combination.
Awesome. You know, I think that one of the things that's really common, you know, from what I hear from patients and even practitioners is they think with Lyme disease specifically or any of the tick-borne illnesses, you know, it's all about kill, kill. You got to obliterate the bug. And that's why they're using not only an antibiotic, but multiple antibiotics for different forms of Borrelia, because we know that, you know, it can evade the immune system in different forms. But, you know, that's what I love about herbs, as you mentioned, is that, you know, there's multiple effects from a single herbal combination. So you don't always have to, you know, have an herb for the cystic form versus the L form versus, you know, all the different aspects, different forms of the spirochete. So it's just, I think we got to get away from this thought that we got to kill it, because realistically, I mean, do you believe that we're ever getting rid of Lyme 100%, or are we just getting the immune system to where it can handle the load that's there? How do you approach that thought process?
You know, everybody talks about the immune system, and I've come to appreciate that it's not just our immune system. We actually have four levels of defense in our body, of microbe defense. Our first level is barriers, skin. The lining of the gut keeps food and microbes inside the gut. Our sinuses are, you know, so we have physical barriers to keep microbes out. Those barriers are leaky. Things get across. We get bitten by ticks or get scratched or have things come in through the respiratory tract and things cross over into the bloodstream. So your second level of defense is your immune system, and it has, you know, armed guards waiting at every door for those things that are coming in. But some things slip by and they invade our cells. And this is true of bacteria, viruses, protozoa, yeast, and it's happening throughout our lives. It's happening to you and I right now. Things are crossing across our gut and getting past our immune system and entering our cells. So our third level of defense is our cells. Our cells can destroy invasive microbes. And that's really important to recognize. I don't think people recognize how important that is. So using a process of autophagy that you hear about, autophagy is that process that cells renew themselves. Well, it's also how cells expel microbes. So healthy cells can expel microbes, except for microbes have this one defense system that they can just go dormant. They can wall themselves off in a corner of the cell. The cell keeps right on working like they weren't there, and they can just stay there. And, you know, this has been documented with Borrelia, Bartonella, all the other tick-borne microbes, Babesia, but also Streptococcus, Staphylococcus. Everything you've heard about have the ability to become dormant inside cells. And this is happening. We're basically getting peppered with these things throughout our lifetime. And as long as they're dormant, we're fine. But when they reactivate, you know, what happens is they need food, and our cells are food. Our cells and tissues are food. And if conditions are hostile, they just go dormant until cells conditions are favorable. So that comes with cellular stress, with not sleeping, with being exposed to toxic substances, with eating a bad diet. All these things add up. These things reactivate. So when you talk about chronic infection, it's not a new infection with something. It's something that's been in your body, but it's not one thing. You may have reactivation of many things all at once, and it can occur at different tissues in different times, which explains different symptoms and different illnesses in different people. But these things reactivate, and what their goal is to take your healthy tissues, your healthy cells, and break them down into a food supply to grow microbes. That's what they're trying to do. So if you can imagine this going on in different areas throughout your body, and your body puts that flame out somewhere, and, you know, and it's going on somewhere else. So the difference in acute illness or acute infection and chronic infection, an acute infection is when a foreign microbe enters your body for the first time, and the symptoms, the malaise and fever that you have, are the scuffle that occurs between the immune system and the microbe. If you've got something that's defined as a chronic infection, what's happened is your body has lost the ability to contain those microbes. Your cells are stressed, your immune system is overworked, and so they're getting the upper hand and they're breaking down your tissues to make for food. It's almost like we're decomposing before we die, and that's what chronic illness is. And this can happen a lot of different ways because we have different tissues and we all pick up different microbes. But basically, it's fundamentally the body has lost the ability to contain the microbes. So part of the therapy is suppressing the microbes. You have to put this thing back in their box, but you have to realize it's not just Borrelia. or it's not just this other co-infection, or it's not even just a few. It may be absolutely hundreds of things. And our ability to test for everything that's possible is so limited that you just can't even conceive, which is, you know, I think there's some value in microbe testing, but I think this idea of we're going to test for the microbes that make you sick so we can kill those microbes and make you well is absolutely crazy. It just doesn't work that way. So what you have to do to overcome chronic illness is restore your body's ability to contain the microbes. And that means long-term suppression of these microbes. And the only thing that you can do that with successfully is herbs. But the herbs at the same time are reducing cellular stress by protecting your cells from free radicals and all the other things that are going on, plus doing the things that you need to do in your life just to settle things down so that your cells have an opportunity to recover. That's what healing is all about.
Absolutely. I love that. And I mean, I wish more people could jump onto that concept or accept that concept. I think it's happening, but I mean, we see it over and over again where people are just plastered with one antibiotic after another. And then you got to deal with all of the effects of that, you know, from, like you said, on the gut and on the immune system. And I love the layout, the outline that you have given us on all of these different things that need to be addressed, because unfortunately, I feel like, again, some of those basic concepts go the furthest. And if we start thinking about things differently on more of that cell level, people are going to do so much better.
I get it. It's being in that position. I mean, I would have paid a lot of money just to walk in and have somebody shoot me up with something or do something to me that fixed me and I could walk out and be well again. But our ability to do that is very limited. And, you know, it's tell people all the time, your practitioner isn't going to fix you. You know, it has to come from inside your body. The most that practitioner can do is point you in the right direction. And I think that's important for practitioners to realize too, that what you're trying to do is help that person create an environment inside their body that allows cellular recovery so that they can regain their health again. And I think we miss that sometimes as practitioners.
Absolutely. Would you mind talking a little bit? Because I know, I think expectations are really important, realistic expectations, right? When someone is struggling with a chronic illness, whether that's Bartonella or Babesia or, you know, or Lyme or whatever microbe they may be struggling with, you know, it's not a quick fix. So, you know, I know on your journey, it took time for you to fully recover. You know, what kind of expectations do you give people when they're struggling with something like chronic Lyme?
Yeah. You know, it depends on where they are. And I have to tell people over and over again, the root of any part of chronic illness, any symptom, inflammation, everything else is cellular stress. So the process of healing is about cellular recovery throughout the body. And part of that is putting these microbes back in their box, which takes long-term suppression. You can't just, you know, this idea that we take 10 days of doxycycline or 30 days of doxycycline and wipe out Borrelia, or even 6 months of an antibiotics to wipe out Bartonella, just not going to happen. And, you know, so it's this long-term suppression, and that's why the herbs are so valuable, because you can do it without trashing the gut, and people can do it long-term, but it does take time. You know, I had some pretty significant symptoms. I mean, I was having heart involvement with irregular heartbeat badly. I mean, I ended up with a cardiac cath just to make sure ultimately that didn't help me, but you know, I had cardiac symptoms, I had brain symptoms, I had gut symptoms, my joints were falling apart. And I started noticing a difference after about 3 months of taking the herbs and felt like I was onto something enough to persist. But it was kind of a back and forth thing of rotating different herbs and just, you know, being in a situation of having a hard time to change my health habits, you know. I mean, I was under financial stress because I had to stop practicing my regular practice. I started my own primary care practice, which was a huge financial strain, having to invest in this practice. I ended up in a moldy office building, so I learned about mold. And so I had all these stresses of just trying to stay afloat in life that helped perpetuate my illness. But persistently with the herbs, I gradually crawled out of that hole over about 5 years and regained my health completely. The interesting thing that was, though, that I was restored beyond my expectations. So when I was in my 30s, I was diagnosed with essential hypertension. My blood pressure would typically be 150 over 100. And I tried all the drugs and I didn't tolerate them because of side effects. And I finally gave up and said, you know, I'm just going to have to live with this. So along came Lyme disease, and I kind of forgot about the whole thing. But then through the years of therapy, I noticed my blood pressure was getting better. It was going to normal. And my blood pressure normalized completely. Now at age 66, my blood pressure is typically like, 120 over 70.
Wow,
average.
That's awesome.
My cholesterol is better than when I was in my 40s. My blood sugar is great, you know, and part of that is health habits, but the herbs are doing all kinds of remarkable things. It doesn't matter what herb I look at, I can find a study that documents antimicrobial properties of the herbs. All herbs have some antimicrobial properties. Some are better than others. But also anti-cancer properties.
Right.
Every herb I've ever investigated has anti-cancer properties. So why is that? Well, I think there's a microbe connection, these dormant and low-grade pathogens. I think there are some strong connections, but also these cell protective properties. So protecting ourselves from stress and protecting ourselves from microbes, I think that those are the factors that are lowering the risk. And we need to be paying attention to these things because, you know, even though the oncologists are patting themselves on the back for getting better and better at treating cancer, the rate of cancer is just going straight up in younger
Absolutely.
And younger people.
Ugh.
And it's because we're being bombarded with bad food and toxins and stress and all of these things, and it's allowing these microbes in our body to reactivate. And, you know, and we're not addressing these things as a culture. But the herbs are something really important that you can do to protect yourself from all of these things. You know, we talked about toxic substances earlier. The herbs protect your cells and also help neutralize toxins, but also protect the liver so it can modify and conjugate, remove toxins quicker without as much harm to the cells. Our herbs increase blood flow. They do things to our vascular system. You know, that's why my blood pressure got better, was because the herbs were actually having this remarkable effect on restoring my vascular system. They're balancing our hormones. They're balancing those stress hormones from the hypothalamus down. So, you know, many of our herbs are defined as doing that, are adaptogens, but all herbs have a little bit of that fact. But by reducing cellular stress, by balancing our stress hormones, by normalizing those communications in the body, we're restoring our body's ability for all those cells to work as a unit, which is what health is all about.
I couldn't agree more. And I think back to what you mentioned before, you know, we can't, as individuals in our society, we can't solely rely on our medical system to get us well. We have to be our own advocates. We have to take our health into our own hands. And I think when we're talking about chronic inflammation, chronic infections, cancer, you know, there's no better way to do that than to educate yourself. And that's what I love about what you've developed in your books. You know, your books, you know, Unlocking Lyme and the Cellular Wellness Solution, for our listeners out there, those are two great places to start to learn more about these herbs that can be so beneficial and, you know, some of the symptoms and the struggles that you may be experiencing when you are having issues with chronic Lyme, because it's very isolating. I didn't talk to you about this, Dr. Rawls, but your book personally helped me a lot when I was,
thank you.
chronic Lyme. And I didn't realize that, you know, I've actually worked with Lyme patients and it was eye-opening to me on many levels because I was trained, I did a lot of training with ILADS. So, you know, we learn a lot about antibiotics in the beginning and the different protocols. And I got sick. I had an acute onset, long story short, of neuropathy down my entire right side of my body out of nowhere. And my face was tingling. I was having muscle twitching and fasciculations. It was really scary. I thought I was dealing with MS. So I ordered an MRI on myself and I had, you know, changes on my MRI and I went to the ER and, you know, got a lumbar puncture because I was freaking out. And I actually had myelin antibodies as well. So I went to the ER, you know, again, they, you know, the lumbar puncture was negative. So they had, you know, really no solutions. I saw neurology. They weren't of any help. But the neurologist, I actually saw the MS specialist because I insisted on seeing him. And he said, you know, sometimes people just think they're feeling numbness and tingling, but it's not really there. That's what he told me. So, you know, eventually I did some testing like you did, and it finally came up as a positive when I did the right tests. And, you know, I jumped right to what I knew best, which was the antibiotics, and I got nowhere. I got, you know, after months of antibiotics, I was just getting worse and worse. And it wasn't until I, you know, made some changes. I read your book and I started on some herbs in it and it changed my life. But one of the things I wanted to tell you that was one of the more things that was helpful to me reading your book that may seem really insignificant is you mentioned in there a specific symptom with chronic Lyme that a lot of people have where they have neuropathy or pain that starts in their sciatic region and shoots down their leg. And that was the only, and that was my primary symptom. It was freaking me out because again, I was still convinced I had MS, but that was the only place I found that. And that really just changed my mindset and gave me some comfort, even though I had positive tests to say, hey, this is what's going on. So those little details that you mentioned really were helpful to me. So I appreciate you putting that stuff in your book. And again, I would encourage, you know, our listeners to look at both of his books because they're absolutely phenomenal. But do you mind talking a little bit about the difference between Unlocking Lyme and the Cellular Wellness Solution, just so our listeners may know where they want to start?
Well, yeah, it's just stage of my knowledge. So I mentioned to you earlier that writing was my therapy when I was going through this. If I could figure out something well enough to write it down for someone else, then it helped me understand it too. And Unlocking Lyme, I was at a place of better understanding these microbes and recognizing that they weren't high-grade pathogens. They were low-grade pathogens that a lot of people are exposed to. And not everybody gets sick. It's that situation that I know, you know, I define now as cellular stress. So with the first book, I really wasn't to the point of understanding how the microbes operated as far as the dormancy factor. And I really hadn't taken the whole thing to the level of understanding the body from the point of the cells, looking at it at the cellular level. So carrying it just, you know, five years further, I reached that point, but I realized it was a lot bigger than Lyme disease. That if you understood the mechanisms going on in chronic Lyme, you really understood all chronic illnesses. So, and again, I don't see chronic Lyme as an infection with a microbe or even a few co-infections. I think there's a lot more going on, but they're all low-grade pathogens, and it's the inability of our body to contain these things. And it's not surprising that you and I and so many people have a lot of the symptoms of MS because, you know, I think MS is basically the same thing going on, just maybe a different assortment of microbes in a different way. But basically, the microbes are opportunist. They are waiting for cells to be weakened. And when they either, you know, they can either reactivate or invade weakened cells. And basically, they're trying to make food. And one of the resources is the myelin that insulates our nerves. So they're breaking that down because they need that nutrient to reproduce. And it's not just Borrelia. So I'm actually reviewing a paper right now looking at that microbe aspect of multiple sclerosis. The conventional world seems to be gradually getting closer, but they won't quite go there because it's like they're still looking for the microbe that causes multiple sclerosis. And it's just I'd like to shake them and say, no, that's not what's going on. These are things that have been in a person's body and they're reactivating. They've had this opportunity. And once they start breaking down tissues, then that intensifies the cellular stress. And it just makes it so that it's really hard to get over. And breaking that cycle is, you know, you're just not going to use antibiotics and kill them. And that's the other thing, the conventional doctors, I mean, we've made an association between mycoplasma and rheumatoid arthritis and even general arthritis that goes back decades. And the conclusion they keep making is, well, we tried to treat them with antibiotics and they didn't respond, so it must not be the microbe that's driving that. And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
These things, these dormant microbes don't respond well if they're inside cells or, you know, or reactivated, they're growing slowly enough that antibiotics just aren't going to eradicate these things. You're going to wipe out your normal flora first. It's just not going to work. So you have to really change your thought processes. But I mean, I've been able to look at any chronic illness and develop this scenario of looking at these factors driving a cellular stress. I mean, that's one of the things that I do when I sit down with a client or a patient is we start building out why they got sick in the first place. And, you know, when you start, it's always within those five factors. You know, we go through their diet, what that's been through their lifetime. We go through what kinds of toxic substances or environment they were exposed to. We go through stress and sleep. We go through what their exercise habits are, and then what microbes they might have been exposed to. And sometimes that starts all the way back to their childhood. And we look at these factors and you can piece together why that became ill. So I don't really limit myself to diagnosis anymore. When I think when you're talking about a chronic illness, that concept of, well, I have fibromyalgia and I have MS and I have chronic Lyme, it just doesn't make any sense anymore. Everybody has a different spectrum of microbes, and that cellular stress comes together different ways to cause different symptoms and different manifestations. But it's all fundamentally the same thing going on. And what that means is the solutions are the same.
Absolutely. No, I love it. And I know we talked a little bit about this before, but I feel like, you know, each case is different, right? But there's some basic solutions that can work for everybody. And one of the things about medicine, we tend to have concrete diagnoses and concrete answers and concrete treatment plans when that just never works. Even when you have the same set of symptoms, they're going to be there for different reasons. So we have to yes, we want to utilize our research and our science to help move us along, but we also have to use common sense. And, you know, everything that you're saying just makes sense. I mean, a lot of these principles are not, you know, what rocket science, right? I mean, people can implement these things and promote healing fairly quickly with some very basic changes. So I would highly recommend, you know, people reading your books, because I think that really just, you do such a great job about outlining these basic steps that you can take. And in learning more, I wish we had more time to talk about the herbal piece, because I think that is such an important thing. And I know there's a lot of different herbs and they're utilized for different reasons. But before we end, Dr. Rawls, I would love to ask you, you know, what are your top three herbs that you, if you were left on an island, you know, with struggling with chronic inflammation, chronic infections, and you had three herbs to choose, what would they be?
And only three. Well, the more herbs you use, the more synergy you get between the herbs. So that's always nice. I'd say one of my favorite top herbs just for that microbe stress would be Chinese skullcap. Chinese skullcap is a really nice antimicrobial herb. It's been found to have activity against Borrelia, Bartonella, Babesia, COVID, you know, SARS virus. So it's wide range, but it's also a great immune modulator. So people hear about herbs to treat viral illnesses like echinacea and elderberry. Those are immune stimulants, and they're great for something acute, but not something you would want to use long term. So what Chinese skullcap does is balance this the immune function. So if you've got areas that are underactive, it's going to boost them, but overactive, like mast cell activation and things like that, it's going to bring those things back to normal. So Japanese or Chinese skullcap is a really nice one. Reishi mushroom, that's a wonderful herb. It's been found to have some of those potent anti-cancer substances. It's an adaptogen, so it helps us balance stress. And that's a really nice herb. Possibly another adaptogen like rhodiola would be a good one to have on hand, especially for my life right now, because it helps us adapt to physical stresses, and it's just a really clean, nice herb. And if I couldn't get that one, maybe Japanese knotweed. Yeah, that's another favorite. Great antimicrobial herb, but it's a good source of resveratrol, which is great for the vascular system.
Great. That's awesome. And again, I know you outline all of these different herbs in your books and talk about all the benefits. So thank you for doing that. And, you know, again, I really appreciate you being here and helping educate the community about, you know, what's there. It really gives them hope. And I think, I know this, and I've seen this, when you're struggling with a chronic health issue that people really can't get to the bottom or give me a concrete answer on, it's debilitating mentally. That's a huge stressor in itself. So just, being made aware that people are not alone, I think is so important, and that there is hope and there are strategies to promote healing. And they may not be quick, but over time and over seasons, you can see, progress. And that's, I think, so important for people to remember. So thank you for doing what you do and sharing your story and all of the many tips you have to help people recover. And we hope to have you on the podcast again in the future.
Love to. That would be great.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. I'm Dr. Seth Osgood, the founder of Grassroots Functional Medicine. Don't forget, you can join the Grassroots private Facebook group to connect with fellow health seekers and find practical tips to improve your state of wellness. Just search Grassroots Community on Facebook to join. And if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you're looking for a comprehensive program to reclaim your state of wellness with cutting-edge testing, a team of providers to hold you accountable, and a structured plan of action to not only get you well, but to keep you well in the years to come, check out our adaptation programs online at grassrootsfunctionalmedicine.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a blessed day.